This is Dean Thompson. Dean.
So when I was about 5 years old, my sister asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I told her I wanted to be a bird, a little fuzzy baby chick, to be precise, because they're like so cute. But as I got older, I realized that I couldn't really be a bird. But it didn't lessen my enthusiasm for animals. I loved animals. And in particular, I loved predators. Lions, big cats, wolves. And then I got into birds of prey, eagles, hawks, falcons. So it's no surprise that when I graduated from college, I spent about 4 years working with birds of prey, working with raptors. And so when I think of my alter ego, it has nothing to do with humans at all. I'm an animal, okay? And that's my alter ego. I have flying dreams that are just amazing. I know how to fly. It's crystal clear how I can use my fingers as primaries and move in the wind. Wonderful. So that, you know, a raptor would be my alter ego. But what was weird is when I went and told my wife that the theme was alter ego, she immediately said, oh, that's easy, it's your dogs. And I got to thinking, well, yeah, I do like dogs. I like dogs a lot. They're predators. And when you have a dog, you're as a puppy, you're with them, and you're that dog and that the pet and the egos, they kind of rebound off each other to the point where people do end up resembling their pets. And it's true. I think dogs can be people's alter ego. So here I am, a human, and my alter ego is either a raptor or a canine, okay? And so I thought, how do I combine these three? And then it hit me, of course, in the sport of falconry. And falconry is an ancient art developed thousands of years ago where you take a raptor, a bird of prey, hawk, eagle, falcon, whatever, and you train it so it's tame enough to where after it makes its kill, it doesn't fly away, it'll hop onto your gloved fist and feed, and you get the kill that they made. And to call these birds pets, I think is kind of being a disservice to the birds and to the falconer, because it's more of a relationship built on trust and a mutual trust and mutual distrust. I mean, the falcon trusts the human not to harm them and provide them with a safe place and provide them with food, but instinctually, deep down in their psyche, they distrust this hairless ape because that's just what they're supposed to do. And on the flip side, the falconer trusts the falcon to conform to certain behavior patterns that wild animals do, but also distrusts that inherent wild nature of that bird. And even though that's true, I still think falconers resemble their birds very much. Most of the falconers I've met are intense people. They have this little wild side to them. They're very devoted to their birds. Many falconers are very wealthy, or they're the opposite. They're not so wealthy, and their cars are beat up, and their houses aren't that real great. They're divorced, they're single, but they are devoted to their birds, devoted to falcons. And it's interesting because most of the raptors, like endangered raptors like peregrine falcons and bald eagles, would not be doing very well if it wasn't for falconers, because they're the ones that developed the techniques and knew enough and had the devotion to help those birds. And such was the case when I got to work at a project down in Yuma, Arizona, in the lower Colorado River, working with Harris hawks. And the biologist in charge down there, his name was Glenn, was a falconer. And the buddy I was working with, John, he was also a falconer, and they had falconry friends, and it was kind of a treat for me to be included into this little subset of this culture, this falconry community. And when we would go hawking in the afternoons, it was just it was so cool. Driving down to the alfalfa pivot south of town, there was this sense of anticipation and excitement as we would go down there. The alfalfa pivots were these large circular alfalfa fields that were surrounded by desert scrub and canals and fence rows. And you'd see jackrabbits and cottontails around there, but that was not our quarry. When we went down there, the quarry that we were interested in were pheasants. And pheasants are large, muscular birds related to grouse and quail and chickens. And they would much rather run than fly, especially if there's a raptor, a predator in the air. If there's a predator in the air, they're not flying. Okay, they're gonna stay on the ground. And that's where Rena came in. Rena was Glenn's dog. And she was a Vizsla, and Vizslas are a breed favored by many falconers. She was a tawny, short-haired pointer with golden eyes, floppy ears, and a little stubby tail. And she, too, carried that sense of excitement and anticipation as we drove down to those fields. And when we got out of the van, she would be right by Glenn's heel, just following him, watching every move that he made, waiting for her release to go to work. And at the time, Glenn had two birds. He had a prairie falcon, a young prairie falcon that was an immature bird, and then he had an older peregrine prairie hybrid falcon that was much more experienced. It was a Tiercel, a male, and his name was Ragnar. And Ragnar was actually a celebrity in his own right, in the sense that this old TV show called Falcon Crest, they would show falcons in it. That was Ragnar. Ragnar was the falcon in Falcon Crest on the opening credits, and anytime they need a falcon in there, that was Ragnar. So it was Ragnar's turn to hunt on this one particular day. And I had seen many hunts and different people fly their birds, and it didn't really come together and crystallize to my mind that that's what I could do. I that would be my alter ego, to be a falconer. And when it came to be was when watching Glenn do this one hunt. And this hunt, it was Ragnar's turn to hunt. And Glenn reached into the van, and Ragnar stepped daintily upon his gloved fist and balanced effortlessly, even though he had a hood on his head. And they had put the hoods on the falcons to calm them down, because birds' brains are mostly eyeball. I mean, their eyeballs are so big, birds can't move their eyeballs in their skull. That's why birds are always doing this, because they can't go like this, all right? So the hood keeps the bird calm, and Glenn took his free hand in his teeth and undid the leather thongs and removed the hood of the bird. And when that hood came off the bird, the falcon was the center of the moment. Dark, penetrating eyes, taking in everything around him. And Ragnar kind of roused to shake off the indignity of the hood and defecated. And then Glenn undid the jesses, and he took off. Strong wings pulling his light frame up into the air, up high into the desert light, up and away from Glenn, heading for the far side of the field. He just kept flying. Meanwhile, Rena's next to Glenn, just looking at him, just trembling, just shaking. He said, "Okay, girl, let's go." And boom, she took off. Just joy in every step of that dog's bounding frame, just going through the alfalfa, trying to find the scent of a pheasant. And Glenn followed along, and occasionally Rena would stop and look at Glenn, and Glenn would be like, "Oh, go ahead, keep going, you know." And then we could hear Ragnar coming back, his bells lightly chiming up high in the sunset light, ching, 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 about 100 feet above Glenn, and went past Glenn and kept going to the other side of the field, and just circling around the field, and Glenn kept following Rena, and then Ragnar came back, probably like 200-300 feet above Glenn, just circling. They called it waiting on, just waiting, looking down at the two land-bound mammals. And I was looking up at that falcon circling, and I looked down, and I could see that Rena was a statue, just frozen, with one leg up in that perfect pointer pose. Glenn looked at Rena, looked up in the sky, and waited for Ragnar to get it right the perfect moment, and then Glenn said, "Ho, ho, ho!" And Rena burst into this clump of alfalfa, and that pheasant just exploded up out of the bushes. And I don't know, when you hear a quail or a pheasant or a grouse go up, even though you know it's there, when that thunder of wings happens, it's always startling. And that pheasant burst up out of there and started heading for the near side of the field where there was a fence row, heading for cover. Up in the sky, Ragnar just pitched over several strong beats of his wing, and then just using the tips of his pinions to finely tune his descent, plotting a plot to intercept the pheasant as it was fleeing along. And right at the last moment, the pheasant kind of jigged hard to the left, and Ragnar couldn't get a square hit and ended up hitting that pheasant anyway, just up, thwap, you could hear the thwap and an explosion of feathers, but it didn't knock the pheasant down. The pheasant just kept going. It was a tough old bird, and it kept on going, although faltering strokes as it was going. And then Ragnar, with the momentum, pitched back up into the sky about another 50 to 80 feet, winged over, came down, and then hit that pheasant and bound to the back of the bird, riding that pheasant down into the alfalfa, trying to use his beak to bite the back of the pheasant's neck, using that extra little tooth that falcons have to sever that spinal cord, and then they disappeared into the alfalfa. Glenn and I and Rena are running over to where they disappeared over there. And when we got there, Rena had gotten ahead of us, and she was laying down looking at these two birds on the ground. Both birds, wings drooped, panting, looking at each other. Now, up in the sky, the falcon had the advantage. But on the ground, the pheasant had the advantage. Pheasants have little spurs on their legs, sharp beaks, and the pheasant you can tell it was injured, but it was still game. And Glenn looked at that pheasant and looked down at Rena and said, "Get her." And Rena just plowed into that pheasant and finished it off. And Ragnar kind of hopped back and fluttered. He had this look of like indignity, like I could have dealt with it. But you know, the look quickly faded because he looked over at Glenn, and Glenn had this fresh piece of meat on his glove, and Ragnar saw that piece of glistening flesh and jumped up there and began feeding contentedly. And I went over and I grabbed the pheasant, and we sat there and we let Ragnar eat a little bit, and then we stood up and we walked back to the van in the fading desert light. And I thought to myself, what a strange and wonderful thing I just saw. Here we had three totally unrelated species of animals weaving their egos together for one common goal. Totally unnatural, but naturally beautiful in its execution.